Good evening and welcome. The time is 6 p.m. and I'd like to call to order the February 12, 2020 Kaiser Planning Commission. Debbie has a noted attendance. If we can go ahead and take a look at the minutes, everybody should have gotten the January 2020 minutes. Can we get a motion on the table for the minutes, please?
I move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Callier and second by Commissioner Whalen to approve as presented. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you, Debbie. Appearance of interested citizens. All right, seeing none. So now is the public hearing on the proposed text amendment for section 2.302 street standards, clarifying how many partials or units may be accessed from access easement and modifying requirements for street tree placements. The time is 6:02, and I'm going to go ahead and open the public hearing. As always, commissioners, if we can, let's let Nate and Shane get through their staff report. If there's certain questions that must grab your attention, go ahead and ask them. But most of the time, they answer our questions as they're going along. So, Mr. Brown, Mr. Witham, please enlighten us tonight.
Thank you, Commissioner Lawyer. So tonight, we're bringing section 2.302, which is our street standard section of the code. The title, it's pretty straightforward. There was two primary objectives with this text amendment. One, clarifying the number of dwelling units allowed or the number of parcels that could be served on an access easement. And then kind of a secondary issue, which has been kind of an ongoing struggle at times for development of lots. We're recommending to change the amount of streetscaping trees required, not in a right-of-way strip, but on private property based on lot widths. So the text is pretty straightforward. However, I do want to make sure that I bring to your attention the sheet that I placed before you before the meeting. This was kind of a, I don't know, beyond 11th hour ad, hot off the presses for the language that's proposed. And generally speaking, staff report's pretty complete as far as why we think it's important. Initially, one of the concerns we have is that the way a dwelling unit is defined in the development code is basically any kind of a dwelling unit. The language in our street standards section is very specific to single family and duplex for access easements or multifamily or commercial development. And there is no in between. And since we've been to the commission like 17 times for accessory dwelling units and various iterations of it that the state has, you know, kind of thrust upon us, there's been some things that have been missed. And we feel that intent-wise, that's one of the pieces that's missed. And so the conflict in the code currently that sits is that if you have an access easement that serves two or three or four homes and one of those homes wants to establish an ADU, which is now allowed everywhere, arguably it could preclude someone from being able to establish an ADU if they were on an access easement. Or I think the harder and maybe worse scenario for administration would be if there was maybe three lots and one person built an ADU and then the next door neighbor said, oh, that's a great idea, I want to do that too. And they came into us and we would say, oh, no, you can't do that. That person is the fourth unit. And, well, but wait, it's my driveway. It's private. I own it. So what we're proposing to do is change that vernacular of dwelling unit to just simply be strictly to a parcel base. So when an access easement is created, it's practical for us because there will be either a subdivision or partition proposal, which doesn't necessarily show us exactly what will be built on a lot, but it will show us what can be built on a lot. So the language we're proposing is primarily to say, hey, you can serve four parcels, whether or not they're developed with a single family home and an ADU is kind of irrelevant at that point. It's just the design standards and setbacks that would apply for any of those. I think that one that the additional language that was brought in was actually a suggestion from our Public Works Director, and the language is maybe not 100% polished, although I think Nate did a pretty darn good job of capturing it. But one of the things we've had a few different times is, obviously, because Kaiser is so compressed and we have so little greenfield development that's happening, pretty much everything is infill. And so when we have parcels that maybe are larger on some of our collector and arterial streets, the traffic engineer, Public Works Director, they really don't want additional driveways where people are backing out onto those busy streets. We want to consolidate those driveways. And in fact, the street standards section talks about shared driveways and consolidation when possible, and even requiring it in some regards. So this new language we're proposing is basically giving more flexibility for our Public Works Director and city engineer to say, hey, if you've got a situation where maybe you have a large parcel that has an existing house with a driveway out front, and they have enough room to put four parcels back there, and so they want to do a little four or five lot subdivision, the way our code reads right now, we would say, okay, well, they're going to have to maintain this existing driveway out here and then serve the new ones on the access easement, but they can't exceed four, so they're going to have double stacked driveways. And so we've actually processed a few variances over the years to justify allowing a fifth or sixth parcel on an access easement when it's on a collector or arterial street. So what this language is proposing to do is to say, hey, if that access easement is coming off of an arterial or a collector street, then the Public Works Director may approve additional parcels above the four maximum. And so that's the purpose of it. So that's kind of the whole story on the number of units versus number of parcels served on an access easement. And then that secondary piece, our code previously said, I think it was 45 feet for street trees. And we're proposing to move that up to 60 feet to be kind of the cap of where we go from one to two trees. And the reason being is that, and while I don't have a table for you to say exactly how many lots have been created in the last 5 years and what their widths were, but the vast majority of the lots that have been created in Kaiser the last 5 years have been 50 feet or narrower. It's a pretty common width, and we have a 40-foot minimum width in our code. And what happens is on a 40-foot wide lot or even a 45-foot wide lot, you know, 20 feet of the lot is eaten up by a driveway. 5 foot setback next to the driveway, normally something's pushed over to the side. So 25 feet of a 40-foot wide lot or a 45-foot wide lot is eaten up. And I literally just approved a brand new house, beautiful, nice big house on a pretty standard size lot, not overly narrow, but I had to make this brand new property owner plant two trees in the front yard, and it will dwarf the front yard as those trees get larger. And so it's our recommendation that we adjust that number up a little bit, and then if your lot's more than 60 feet wide or 60 feet along a street, then we have enough room to put a couple of trees. And in my brain, the justification is our standard spacing for trees along a right-of-way in a planter strip with no driveways is a tree every 30 feet. Sometimes it's a tree every 40 feet, but generally it's every 30 feet. And so for me, I look at that and go, hey, if you've got 60 feet, you don't want the tree right on the property line because then we get into all the neighborhood problems. But if you've got enough space, you can probably put two trees and make them get, as they get big, have enough space and continue to look nice and not risk the risk of the neighbor or somebody complaining about their tree and then the owner just going, I'm just getting rid of that tree anyway. So that's kind of the justification and the reasoning or upping that standard from the 45 feet up to a 60-foot number. I feel like it's more practical, it's more palatable for what we're seeing actually constructed in Kaiser. With that, I would entertain any questions that you might have on what's proposed before you for consideration.
I'd make a motion we accept the staff
probably close the public hearing before that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we have a motion on the floor. Let's see if we have a, well, we need to close. I don't know, procedurally, how do we do this?
So just ask if there's any other questions.
Is there any other, Frank, you had something?
I did. Is this the time we talk, we ask about types of trees?
Yeah, so make sure you're talking into your microphone.
Is this the time we talk about types of trees?
I mean, suppose you can. We generally, our code doesn't, I mean, the code doesn't talk about the types.
Well, there is a list of approved trees by Public Works.
A separate, that's a street tree ordinance, though. It's not for private property. The street trees that we're talking about are all on private property. So it basically has a reference to our landscaping section that says they have to be of a certain size and type. But I think if you, really, if it was a concern of saying of a certain type, I don't know, Nate, help me out. I guess it could live in that street standard section, but probably the landscaping section would be a more appropriate location for it.
If what you're suggesting is that the city actually develop a list of ornamental trees that we would regulate on private property, that's something we had not anticipated, and that's not part of the recommendation. But, we're talking about those tree requirements, and so I think it would live somewhere in this neighborhood, so to speak. So you might ask your commissioners if that's something that they want to pursue.
So as a matter of function, though, I know that the Kaiser Rotary Arboretum has a series of 70-plus trees planted, and as they start to develop, I think that folks can go down, they can see sort of what the preferable style trees are. So if they're developing private property, they can go down there, okay, well, this is the tree that I really like. But I struggle with the idea of generally trying to tell private property owners you must use one of these.
So, Frank, how this would work is it's not in the current proposal, but if you wanted to propose, there's a motion on the table and seconded. If you want to propose a friendly amendment to include such a list, that's how you would go about that to develop and include that list. And then it would be voted on by the commission. Okay.
The reason why I'm asking these questions is because as Shane moves forward with these, on the private property side and trees, is that if you look at the city of Salem, Cherry City, well, they have a lot of Kwanzaa cherries, and they love to bring up the sidewalk slowly but surely. And then the homeowners are tapped for the bill, and they clear that out, and then they cut the roots, and then, you know what I'm saying, it's because that type of tree does that. So it's labor intent. And so when you look at those trees going on private property, my question is there's the nuts and bolts, Shane, is there power lines that is going to create a future at mature points? See, there's types of trees that will favor one lot more so than another. See what I'm saying? And so we kind of do a preventive maintenance for the property owners, saving them a headache in the future. That's why I asked about this.
Sure.
Guide them. You know, so that's what I'm doing is I'm making a request for a friendly amendment for types of trees to be looked at and then recommended for the homeowners. Yes?
Would, obviously, so we do have a list of trees that are designated for being located in our public rights of way, which generally the list was developed. I mean, it was not developed by me. I'm not an arborist. But it was developed, I think, in order to kind of alleviate some of those concerns. Again, that's only been for trees in the public right-of-way, not on private property. Nate, would it make sense to reference that list or something along those lines, if that's what the motion would be? I'm not sure what the text looks like if we move forward with something of what I'm supposed to write, I guess.
Well, I think what the friendly amendment would be to have staff develop some sort of mechanism to establish a list of approved trees for landscaping. I think that's what your motion would be. So now it has to be seconded by somebody else on the commission.
No. It's a friendly amendment.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And the second?
Mm-hmm. And the second.
I understood that it was Commissioner Whalen and Commissioner Callier, but... Well, I got caught up in whether or not we needed to close the public hearing first before we got motions going. Okay. Thanks.
It's closed.
Okay.
So, does the mover and the second accept a friendly amendment?
I do not. I have horrible nightmares about telling the government can telling who can plant what on their own property. Especially in the case where, and Frank, you brought up sidewalk repair and damage stuff. Well, in the city of Kaiser, unlike the city of Salem, the property owner is responsible for the maintenance and care of the sidewalk. So if I plant a tree that subsequently damages the sidewalk, I'm responsible to repair that, not the city.
I believe Salem is the same.
I do believe so, yes, sir.
Did they finally get that through?
They've been back and forth a couple times.
Okay.
There's another caveat to that, Gary, and that is that we are in a Sioux society happy, or Sioux society. And so somebody who is walking down the sidewalk and the roots are bringing that sidewalk up, the process will get to that homeowner. They will be ultimately sued.
Right. Okay.
And so that's what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to alleviate some of those worries. That's all.
I, as a second, won't accept the friendly amendment either, but for a couple different reasons. One, I want to have something much more specific than what was provided. I want to know more than let's just have this idea. The other thing is that I believe that the city of Kaiser has a process by which they deal with this now. I know in our neighborhood in Gupser, we've had several homeowners that have been told by the city that they had to fix their sidewalk because of the city trees. And trees that they planted in the right of way. Some of them prior to their ownership, but still, and it seems to me it's like a half inch or 3/4 inch they use as a standard if it gets above that. And I don't disagree with what you're saying at all, Frank. I've watched my wife tumble down on the sidewalk because she tripped over concrete lifted up by a rut that's been there for, well, the other 200 times we walked through there. But I have to agree somewhat with Gary in that if it's in the right of way, I should say in the parking strip, for example, then I believe we've got some reason to look at that and make recommendations. And I believe that already happens through Public Works and through their list of trees. But if it's going to be in someone's yard, front, backside, whatever, I'm more reluctant to approve, but I also want to know more specifics. I just don't want to give carte blanche to, well, we're just not going to. You can't plant a tree unless you get a city approval. That's not going to work for me.
Okay. So the motion dies for lack of a second.
For the friendly amendment. Commissioner Krentz.
In reviewing the staff report and doing a little additional research on my own, I noted in the definition section of the Kaiser Development Code that parcel is defined as a unit of land that is created by a partitioning of land. You and I know that partitioning of land is not the only way that properties are created, and partitioning is also not the only way that an access easement would be created. So I propose a friendly amendment that where the staff report suggests the word parcel that we change that to read parcel or lot.
Is that, you're talking about on section four specifically, or just throughout the whole text amendment? Is it applicable term for the whole text amendment, or just for that particular section in four that with the new language?
I think just section four.
I think it's only in section four.
Yeah, yes, only section four.
So, if I understand your friendly amendment correctly, in section four, there's three references to, four references to partial, and then in part B, part C, there's one reference, and then part D, there's also one reference, and you said change it from parcel or lot. Is that correct?
Yes, from parcels to parcels or lots.
I will defer to your expertise and knowledge of the, you know, I mean, to me, that's kind of, it's not wordsmithing, but we want to be accurate. If that makes it more accurate and we eliminate problems downstream for the citizens or the staff, I think it's a win.
Keller?
Okay, good catch. Well,
yeah, no, that definitely, I think throughout our code, parcel and lot is kind of sometimes used. So we absolutely, the intent from staff would be to capture whether or not you call it a parcel, a lot, anything that's being created through the land division process is what we're trying to capture.
Cause a problem with our ADUs?
No, it wouldn't. It's
I'll accept the friendly amendment. I'll accept the friendly.
Yeah, no, it's a good catch.
Okay. So, the friendly amendment, any further discussion? Seems like this one's a pretty easy one. Let's go ahead and call for the question. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Motion passes unanimously. Great job, guys. Thank you very much. So now we move on to new old business or the staff report. What we got?
I was debating whether or not just to put this under council liaison report, but on Monday's work session, we talked about our new transportation planning study, which actually I said Thursday, and it was today. The kickoff meeting was today with our consultants. And one of those tasks, the very first task, is to create a status quo analysis and two additional scenarios. Up on the board, you will see basically the whole enchilada, that if the city chose to separate the UGB and would establish its own UGB, this represents basically the numbers that we know about with a little bit of a fudge factor. So, let me explain. The dark pink that you see in the upper left north west section of the city is our exception lands that are already in the county and they're already zoned residential agricultural. By statute, those are defined as exception lands that must be brought in without question, the first lands that are brought into any UGB expansion. Now, that represents 170 acres. However, all 170 acres, if you'll look, with a few minor exceptions, are very parcelized and carved up into two-acre parcels. And so the development pattern there is going to be very difficult. So we don't expect that those exception lands will supply much of our housing need. That would have to be the 532 acres that you see there, that roughly comes out of our buildable lands inventory that was just finished It's not adopted yet, but it was just finished by a consultant team, Echo Northwest, and that's basically our housing need supply. The 65 and the 80 acre, the yellow and the orange parcels, those represent employment lands. And originally I had told the council that it's one or the other kind of thing. After talking to the consultant today, he is looking at both of those and said, well, your 80 acre parcel, and this was, so scenario two will be just employment lands. This scenario is the whole enchilada, that's employment lands, housing lands, and exception lands. That's roughly what we would be looking at. I need to hit the pause button here, though, because somebody who is viewing this at home may be having, maybe hyperventilating. This is simply a concept plan in order to quantify impacts. This is not a land use decision. This is not, we're moving forward with this. There is a ton of process that would have to be gone through prior to anything that would implement an urban growth boundary expansion. All this is trying to identify a scenario so that we can quantify what transportation impacts these three different scenarios would present. Status quo, a small employment land expansion, and if we got a divorce. Now, if we get a divorce, the reason you see this whole enchilada up here is that if we get a divorce, we are immediately put into periodic review, and we have to demonstrate how we are meeting all of our land use needs. Now, will it look different if we get to that point? Absolutely. This may be overstated because of the work we've done in the RCOD that is now newly in effect. Be that as it may, we wanted to make sure that we quantified the worst case scenario so that the council will have adequate information to make a decision about how we are addressing these needs as we move forward.
So when you say needs, specifically this is related to the transportation study, correct?
This is all just related to transportation impacts.
So I think it's important to note for anybody that's watching this, this is not, as you mentioned, an action where we're going for land grab. This is looking at the quantitative impact of this 847-acre area in a worst-case scenario situation after a divorce, and we have to fulfill all of our land use requirements with our own urban growth boundary, employment lands at all.
That is correct. Okay.
So we're not saying we're going after these 847 acres right now. This is just the ability to qualify the data for the transportation purposes so that we're ahead of the infrastructure needs that ultimately, if the development begins to happen, we know what we need from SECs and all the other things in terms to make sure our infrastructure supports it.
Well, the intent is so that we can get a rough estimate. Again, it is not going to be binding. It's not going to be anything, but we would like to be able to educate the council as to roughly what would the SDCs be just simply for transportation if we did this scenario.
And this doesn't take any of the other needs in terms of city services, power, any of that. This is purely transportation.
That's correct. Okay. So based on the conversation that we had today, with just a standalone employment land only, either, and I called it 2A or 2B, the consultant was pretty clear that the yellow proposal without the rest of the UGB expansion is untenable because of all the transportation improvements that would have to go up 35th and across Quinnaby.
Right.
It's rural. It's a rural improvement, and just the crossing of Labiche Ditch is going to have to be rebuilt. And so his strong recommendation, and that's what I'm going to come back to council with, is that we look at the 65 acres, the orange triangle that we see there. I'm actually going to expand it after talking. We are allowed a 25% increase for roads and stormwater and such. So that will probably be a true triangle with a radius on one of the sides.
Nate, when you talk about the crossing, you talking about the crossing at Perkins on Labishtich or where?
Right by Volcanoes.
Right by Volcanoes. Okay. Oh, so that little switchback? Yeah.
I haven't counted the accident report, but I'm sure there is some. Anyway, but the reason it's still up there is because if we get a full expansion, if we were to get an urban growth boundary separation, we're going to come back to go through our economic opportunities analysis would have to be recreated all over again, and there's going to be a heck of a lot more than just 60 acres for employment lands. So likely, my guess is that it would be even larger than what we're showing here. But again, for simply trying to quantify roughly what we're talking about for impacts, this is what we're going for with scenario 3 or 1, depending on how you count. One of the scenarios. The other scenario will be just the orange. Squared off, it'll probably be roughly about 80 acres. And then the third option is status quo. And we're going to incorporate the work that we have done under the RCOD district. Smaller lot sizes, higher densities, and more allowance for attached and various building types. DLCD has looked at it and has done a preliminary calculation and has said that we have the potential to meet all of our multifamily, our high-density multifamily, with the RCOD work that we have already done. So
let me go back to what you said. Employment lands under the 80-acre area would be untenable without the UGB expansion for purposes of residential because of the infrastructure needs. So you're
because of the infrastructure needs.
Your focus is the 65 for purposes of employment.
And specifically, it was specifically based on the location. And this, it's hard because from a statute perspective, a locational analysis would have to be done before anything really truly happened. And that we have not done. It's really been a matter of, okay, this we know in our EOA there's a quantified number. And what does that look like in relation to contiguous to the existing boundary? We also know that it was desirable and mentioned in the EOA having I-5 visibility. So the economic opportunities analysis, sorry. So our economic opportunities analysis from 2013 had kind of indicated that based on what the pursuit of additional employment lands and what those needs look like, that I-5 visibility was desirable. And so that's where that yellow box that got drawn in, that's kind of, well, really, Nate and I literally sat down with maps and said, okay, well, where does that go next to I-5, next to our city? It's got to be there. But yeah, the consultant was extremely concerned with that small of a piece with how much extension of facilities and everything that's there, as opposed to the parcel that was on River Road, that utilities and facilities are much, much, like, they're touching it, basically. They're right there. So not necessarily that 80 acres would be too small, but that specific location he was concerned about.
And so if that's not crystal clear enough, we've also been put on notice by DLCD that our economic opportunities analysis may not withstand a challenge under today's statutory requirements, because that was basically aspirational and did not include a specific analysis of all potential Kaiser economic opportunity land that may exist elsewhere in the urban growth boundary. Yeah.
So you're talking almost to
Mill Creek. And we have work to do, and we are trying to engage all parties. And I am convinced that if this happens, it's going to be because It is a negotiated settlement, and I'm at some point it's despairing because it's like
just looking at this. I'm gonna offer one more thought. Sorry for jumping over anybody. If you have thoughts, I wonder if there's an option 2C. The reason I ask that is I think if I'm looking at the 2B area, I think the neighborhoods in that area are going to struggle a little bit with,
depending on. Are you talking orange or yellow?
Orange. Depending on what kind of employment comes in there. I mean, that's an area with a pretty busy park and some other things like that. So I'm wondering if a 2C might be taking that 65 and incorporating it north of the 80. So if that's
north of what?
North of the yellow.
It wouldn't be contiguous then. It has to be contiguous. And let me also clarify too that this is not just any old employment land expansion. This is specifically driven by the five uses, and if I may be so bold, basically not even all five of those uses. This is for a campus light industrial corporate office use only. It is not, it doesn't even make sense for a sporting facility. Excuse me. It doesn't, basically it has narrowed it down to, if there was an expansion, there would have to be some restrictions as to what kind of use would be established on that parcel. And it would be that, because the 40 acres comes from, it's 20 acres of commercial and 40 acres of the targeted industries that we have in our visioning document. And that 40 acres is specifically tied to a corporate campus such as a hospital or corporate office.
So when you say contiguous, meaning because the 65 is generally one landowner, is that what you're saying in the orange?
No, I'm saying contiguous to the city.
The yellow one, it is confusing with the, we didn't print out all the scenario maps. The yellow and the orange are an either or.
Right.
They're only a both if it was, the decision was made to say, hey, straight up divorce the UGB, have our own UGB. And then we said, I'll just keep all of it in at that point because it's probably going to even get bigger if you really did the divorce. So if the scenario, and one of the scenarios that we want them to look at transportation-wise, is this additional dwelling units along the River Cherry Corridor because of the work, the revitalization plan, how that's going to impact River Road, Lock Haven, all of the different intersections, as well as a employment lands expansion up north in this area. So it's kind of looking at those two things together as a growth picture.
Right, and I guess, just to finish my thought on this, I guess if this is an all-in picture, wouldn't it almost make more sense to consolidate your employment lands in one area and then have, so this 65 acres in the orange would then be residential instead of employment lands, so you have that nice flow.
I see.
Versus, and then and you stack the 65 above the north part of the 80, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then you accomplish the issues, the infrastructure with the 80 alone. So maybe that's a different way of looking at the worst case scenario, is if it's just one or the other, then you have the 65 or the 80. 80 sounds like it's not doable because the infrastructure needs, but if it's full picture, consolidate your whole option for your employment lands in a, you know, 145 acre area to the northeast section versus trying to split it up and putting employment lands right near neighborhoods.
So again, this is not intended to be a locational analysis, but I can tell you the reason that that northern boundary on that 80 acres was drawn there is because that is up to the parcel that just had the major solar installation put on it. So there's some major infrastructure that was already constructed. And you'll also see those other colors on the map. The green is wetland constraints, and the
flood zone, right?
And the floodplain is there as well. So I understand and I appreciate the concept. And again, if we get to that point, this whole thing is going to look different.
Okay.
But that's the reason we drew the blobs where we drew them, is because of the various constraints that are on the map. That the east boundary on that 65 acres, right. That's not a parcel line. That's simply the waterway that runs through there. Right. And so there's a buffer. There's a 50-foot buffer that's with that waterway, and it's a drainage. It's a seasonal stream. But that's where that boundary comes from. So,
Well, thanks for indulging my questions. Commissioner Whelan.
Not to steal any of Councillor Freeman's thunder that she no doubt will have, but when I came away from that meeting last night, two things I heard was that, one, the River Road Cherry over, that new development can possibly take care of our multifamily, which is good. But the other thing was, with the study that PSU is doing, this supposed to be done by this November, so sometime at the end of this year, early next year, we're going to have all new numbers to work with. And I think I came away with the understanding that council basically said, let's just wait so we don't have to do this multiple times. Let's get as much data as we can to make an informed decision on if or what we should be doing. Is that?
In regards to?
To where this map fits in. I mean, you're giving a staff report of what happened last night. And I think what happened last night, a big part of it was that.
Monday night, right?
Monday.
Or Monday night, whatever that. Yeah, two nights ago. at the last council meeting, work session, I think the council came away saying, well, let's wait until the November PSU study before we really take more time and staff energy and resources to muddle further along.
I took that for regarding making a final decision on the what we're doing about the UGB. But we are plowing ahead with this transportation study.
So right. The transportation study is a separate piece, yeah.
So that they will have that much more additional information to make an intelligent and informed decision. November will be here before you know it.
Not even Valentine's Day.
Not even Valentine's
Day. Cut my lawn for the second time in January. We're in summer.
And there's camellias in bloom and daffodils.
So this transportation study overall is just another notch in the belt, so to speak, in terms of looking to get the data to support that conversation about establishing our own destiny as it relates to our city or urban growth boundaries.
In my mind, it's the final piece of the puzzle. Okay. It's, okay, this is what you can expect for your costs to be. This is the impact that you would face in the amount of land that you would consume. And this is, I mean, we're not going to go through all of the analysis for what would that mean for the police department? What would that mean for the community development department? But I think it's sufficient to say they'll have to be bigger. You know, and so operational costs for the city and those kinds of things. Again, this is not that level of study. This is focused on transportation. But it will at least quantify the land that we're talking about. It will quantify the scale of the kinds of system development charges that we're talking about. And the council already has the visioning document that was truthed in our, that was the first step in our revitalization plan, was to make sure that everybody still agreed with the goals and objectives of our visioning document. So we didn't change it, but it was definitely discussed and validated in the process. And that wasn't surprising, because that visioning document is, what are the core community values? Well, that hasn't changed, even though that visioning document is 10 years old, still, the same core values still hold true in the city of Keyser. No surprise.
So I have one more question with a possible follow-up. In the RCOD, how much was transportation issues addressed in terms of the infrastructure needs and the impact of the RCOD on transportation?
The transportation impacts, the transportation work that was done in that RCOD was trying to identify some of the specific gaps that there exist now. Right. In the bikeway system, in the pedestrian system, and it didn't attempt to try and say, well, these transportation improvements would have to be done, but that will be done with this study.
You answered my follow-up. Thank you. This is just exciting. I think this is great work. So any additional thoughts, questions, or comments on this information from Mr. Brown? Any other new or old business from the commission? All right, Councilor Freeman.
Well, Nate, I could have not done it that well, so thank you for stealing my thunder. Because that was Monday night, and that seems like a long time ago, and I know it's only Wednesday. So with that conversation, I would just encourage everyone to stay tuned for more discussion, and let's see what happens. It is exciting, and it's been a long process. I mean, we bring up the buildable lands inventory and housing needs analysis, and it's like, again? But, you know, it's important to continue the conversation and how they all are intertwined together and how important it is to have all the information. So thank you for that. As far as council, Neighborhood Association West Kaiser meets tomorrow at 7. I'm not sure who their speaker is. I will be attending the Police Academy for week 2, which is fabulous. So I would encourage anyone next time if you have that opportunity to participate in that event. Believe it or not, we're starting a budget conversation. So we have our March planning work session will be long-range planning for the budget, and then we already have the date selected for May for our budget meetings. Again, those are open to the public, and I would encourage everyone to look at the budget and really see how our city money is spent, and that we really do not have, we're not sitting on a cash flow and have tons of money for all the great ideas that we all have, and someday maybe we'll have enough money to really fund all the ideas everyone has and the dreams of council and city staff. So that's coming up, and I think that's really about it for me. Thank you.
All right. So Tuesday, February 18th, Commissioner Cowell, are you available to do the Planning Commission update to the council?
I guess I'm going to have to be.
And loving every minute of it.
All right. Well, if there's no additionals, oh, by the ways, or anything else, looking left, looking right, we will adjourn the meeting of the Planning Commission at 6:49.
Assuming that's correct.
Yeah. Give or take 5 minutes.